Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Fuck coin tail pro.
Show. They got me started, lying hearted. I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised? Black power, be scared guys, that be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Fuck coin tail pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Black power, brothers and sisters. You're listening to the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense nightly broadcast. Tonight, brothers and sisters, as usual, will continue to be not only thought-provoking, but informative. Tonight is part seven. Yes, part seven. Of the grand jury of the International Human Rights Tribunal on the COVID pandemic. We have been listening to testimony from different doctors, attorneys, researchers, developers, virologists, biologists, pathologists, historians, journalists, victims, everyday people, you name it, from all across the planet Earth, from the Americas to Europe, from Africa, from India, all over the earth. We've been hearing testimony as to this crime against humanity that is taking place with the unleashing of the COVID-19 SARS-2 virus on humanity, but also the draconian policies that the governments of the different nations inflicted the people upon and are currently going through, not to mention the lethal injection that's been shot all over the planet, the jab. We're hearing testimony after testimony how this pandemic was something that never had to occur. We're hearing from doctors upon doctors that the treatment for the virus in and of itself has always been around, and that was a safer treatment than the Dr. Kevlakian type of treatment that has been forced upon hospitals and care workers to do across the globe that caused loss of life. We're hearing testimonies and testimonies about the true adverse effects and the numbers that people are receiving and dying from as a result of the vaccine that was being coerced and in some places forced under duress. So this is a continuation. There's going to be a few more clips that we will be playing. The closing argument actually took place on the 26th, which was Saturday. So we're playing the testimonies. Some of the days of testimonies were very long, so we split it down into a little over 2 hours per session. This is why it's broken up in parts. So without further ado, here's more information. Take notes. Black Power.
We should continue now with either Vanessa concluding her testimony or with Professor Burkhardt. But I think Vanessa has been waiting for too long now. Yes.
Rainer, I would make this suggestion because there are two chapters left, and one of the chapters was already nicely summed up by Tusharit and Mike. It was about biodistribution, etc. So I can skip this. And the other one is about why all vaccinations failed so far. It does not fit really in the context where we are now, I think. So it's completely fine that we can skip this and go directly to Arne Burkhardt. I think that's more important.
Thank you very much. We will surely ask some questions in our discussion. Okay, Professor Burkhardt.
Yes, hello to everybody. First of all, Sucharit Bhakti introduced me very kindly, but actually I just have to say I did in the last 2 years what I've done for 40 years. If somebody came to me and asked, well, can you look why my relative died, will you take a look? I said yes. If somebody asked me, well, do I really have cancer? I said, well, yes, I will take a second look. And I invited them to my microscope, and this is what I do with the results that I will present today. Everybody can look at them if he comes here. So to show you my our study, I will need some slides to show. Can I do this?
Go ahead.
Where should I?
There should be like a green area, like in the bottom.
No. I don't. No, this is not it.
No, but it, yeah.
There it is. We can see it. Yes.
No, this is not.
Or maybe not. No.
No.
Nope, not yet.
Not yet.
You have to pick the right window.
Well, I have...
I think you have to click on your document and then go for the screen share.
I have Bildschirm, whiteboard, iPhone, Microsoft,
No, I mean just on the document that you would like to share. I think you have to click onto that. And
yes,
then
but it's not, I cannot see it.
I will have Corvin show you how to do it.
Yes.
If I may, Arne, you click on share screen, and then you have a number of options that is shown.
No.
Before that, you have to select the screen that you want on your computer. So there is an in between.
You first have to open the document or the picture that you want to show us, and then select share screen.
Yes, okay.
That's Corvin.
Okay. Maybe we just take Shall we ask some questions in the meantime, maybe?
Yes, Dexter, go ahead.
Yes. I know that Professor Baptiste is up. Maybe we can attend to him.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wait.
Yes, go ahead, Sushari.
Oh, okay. Do go down. Yeah. Yes. I'm here now.
Yes, you are.
Dexter, I just wanted to add one thing. As we're at it now, all mRNA vaccines of the future are going to face the same problems that we are experiencing now. We have to demand that these gene-based vaccines are never, ever allowed to be given emergency use authorization with this warp speed time of preparation. I mean, this is what Mike Eden also said. You cannot test the safety of any new vaccine within months. You cannot. Now, to end, also the other vaccines of Novavax, which are not gene-based, must never be allowed to be used under emergency use authorization, because there is no reason. There's no reason, since there's no pandemic at the moment. Secondly, because no one has ever shown the efficacy of these damn other vaccines like Novavax. And third, because their safety has pharmacokinetics, anything you want, has also never been tested. Okay? People are now trying to move to the non-gene-based vaccine. And I think it's very important to say no. No right now. Okay. So if you wanted to ask anything, Dexter, please go ahead.
No, you had your hand up. That's why he said you wanted to say.
Oh, okay. That's what I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Professor Bhakti.
Maybe while Professor Burkhardt is resolving the screen share issue, we can continue with Antonietta Gatti.
Okay, thank you very much. I wanted to introduce myself. First, I am a physicist and bioengineer, and I face the problem of this pandemic from an original point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It means that I studied the vaccines directly, also because I had an experience of innovative analysis under scanning electron microscope coupled with an energy dispersive spectroscopy. And I verified the chemical composition and the contamination of 42 standard vaccines. Of course, I applied this new technique also to new gene therapy products. And of course, they are completely different from the standard vaccines. I don't talk to you about spike protein because you are really expert, more expert than me. I wanted to discuss the nanotechnological content of these vaccines, these products, because they are not vaccines from my point of view. And probably you know, they, Big Pharma, develop a new technique of nanomedicine for these products, and they wanted to introduce mRNA inside the cell. Every biologist knows that mRNA is recognized by the sensor of the cell membrane, and they are rejected. So that they use the Trojan horse. It means that they fill liposomes, nano liposomes with mRNA, because these nanoparticles are not recognized by the sensor of the cell membrane. When someone constructed the human bodies, probably they didn't know that there were also nanoparticles, so there are no efficient defense mechanism against nanoparticles. So they are phagocytes by the cells, and when they are inside the coating of lipidic components are degraded, and mRNA is released inside. No, Big Pharma didn't release any knowledge about the mechanism of degradation of these liposomes. I don't know if this mechanism is related to the low temperature. The initial low temperature of minus 70 degrees probably was related to the storage of liposomes. We don't know. We think that there is a correlation. But the problem is that nobody controlled the mechanism and also entities, these nano entities. Nobody means no CDC, no FDA, no EMA, no other national organization. So there is no quality control on these products. And my investigations have revealed that inside these products are present also something else. Something else means strange nano entities that probably are due to nanotechnological process, very strange. And these nano entities are out of the mission of the vaccine. There are aggregate of nanoparticles of stainless steel. And we don't know also why surely they are products of nanotechnology, so intentionally added to this product, not to all the products, but only, I think that they are only in some batches, and probably inside some safes of Pfizer and so on, there is a list of the right batches at the wrong batches of vaccines. If you want, I can show you some images so you can understand better what is the wait a minute. Wait a minute that I find and these entities are intentionally added. Sorry, do you see that?
Not yet, Antonia.
Not yet. Wait a minute that I try again. I have the same problem. Now, do
something,
you see that?
Something is coming up, yes.
Okay. Wait a minute. Do you see something?
Yes, we can see it. We can see the picture.
Perfect. These are white particles are not exactly belonging to the vaccine, but they are metallic debris inserted in the needle of the syringe, and they are wear debris of the cold working of the needle. But when they inject the liquid, the vaccine, also these were debris are injected in the body. Do you understand this problem?
Mm-hmm.
You see yes, you see here some white debris, very, very atomically dense. And in this case, this debris is composed of chromium. There is chromium side. Probably these other soft entities are an agglomeration of liposomes or something else, for instance, graphene, for instance. But then it is very interesting because that it is a microneedle, and it is a nanotechnological product, and you see very well from the holes, the periodic holes that are created in this microneedle, and probably this needle is filled with a product, and after this product is released when the vaccine is injected in the body. But I wanted to skip to these entities. They are a mixture of organic material with nanoparticles of silica, aluminum silicate, and all these particles are thrombogenic. They are non-biocompatible, so they can scratch the internal blood vessels. Not only, but they can trigger the coagulative cascade. So some side effects that we see probably can have this particle as a triggering agent. In this case, a spheres of 7 microns of silica. I don't know what is the meaning, why it is inside. And there are other small particles of stainless steel. Stainless steel is iron, chromium, and so on. But I wanted to show you other small particles, that it is very interesting, because that is AstraZeneca. And if you have a magnification of this small entities, you see an ellipse full of nanoparticles, and these nanoparticles are metallic, composed of iron, chromium, copper, nickel, tin, but it is a nanotechnological product, but we don't know what is the mission of these empty inside the vaccine. That it is not biocompatible. I found also some particles of silver, but that it is really interesting. That it is Moderna. These strange entities of 30 microns is full of holes. Probably these holes could be filled with something. They are inside the vaccine. And they are added to the vaccine with a special aim, but we don't know. This small particle is composed of silicon, lead, cadmium, selenide. Cadmium, selenide are nanoparticles, very interesting. They are products of nanotechnologies. They are thermogenic, but we don't know what is the scope of this further material inside the product. And other particles composed of stainless steel, and that it is a organic inorganic compound. It means that probably liposome RNA glued together with metallic particles. Probably you saw that many patients had some magnetic effect in the point of injection. These entities can match these effects. And if there are important electromagnetic fields, these particles can react inside in an electromagnetic field. Another strange particle of aluminum, silicon in Jensen, aluminum titanium. I found many different things inside, probably there is a problem of quality control, not performed by the manufacturer, but also by the control organization, because they are clearly visible under a scanning electron microscope. So I think that I wanted to interrupt the conversation. Yes, because I want to talk with you, especially with Michael Yadon, because I saw a contamination also in the old vaccines, but in the new ones there are nanotechnological compounds, particles inside, and the effect in the human body is unknown. I studied biomaterials, biocompatibility of materials for many years. So I have an experience in that, but it is the first time that I see nanotechnological products inside a fluid. I coordinated a research project of the European Commission of nanotoxicity. And I know very well what is the effect of nanoparticles inside the cell. And I have beautiful photos, images of a direct nano-bio-interaction of these nanoparticles with DNA also, mitochondria, organelles, but also DNA. So from my point of view, these new products are dangerous, very dangerous. I don't see the possibility for the body to contract against this stimuli. Thank you very much.
We will save our questions for the discussion, but Antonietta, do you have any idea if these nanoparticles could have been included in the vials by accident, or do you think?
In the last vaccines, I am sure that there was a contamination during the industrial process to develop vaccines. I think that silver nanoparticles probably they are added for mistake because there was a contamination inside the process of synthesis with other activities and so on. But you saw two or three nano entities and they are nanotechnologically developed and they are intentionally added. That it is my personal opinion, of course. You know that many other scientists declare that probably there is a contamination with external electromagnetic fields. And I think that probably these entities can be the trade union with external electromagnetic field, and when they are inside, they can generate magnetic fields, small magnetic fields that can interact in a new way inside the body. Recently, I published an article about the sudden infant death syndrome. And I worked with other collaborators, neurologists, and analyzing the brain of these babies, we discovered that inside there are contamination particles, also particles of aluminum or aluminum phosphate, and probably some of the scientists present know what it means. Mm-hmm. So that part of the excipients of the standard vaccines were translocated from the mother to the fetus, and inside the fetus to the brain. So it is a novelty, mm-hmm. because we say that there is a risk to give drugs to the mother during the pregnancy. But now it is normal to vaccinate the pregnant ladies. Mm-hmm. It is wrong because if inside, inside there are some inorganic nanoentities, and they can be translocated to the fetus, and that they can be disseminated inside all the organs of the fetus.
Including the brain.
Also the brain, of course, but I think that also they can reach the liver, the kidneys, and so on. Also because they are transported by the blood circulation. Not only, but these the particles I showed you, they can interact with the proteins of the blood. They can activate the coagulative cascade, but they also can create an organic, inorganic compound not more bioresorbable.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is a problem, also because they can trigger the immune system. So these simple images suggest that a new mechanism can be generated, some pathological mechanism can be generated in the body due to the presence of these entities.
Thank you, Antonietta. Let us quickly see if Professor Burkhardt is ready to join us again. Hello, Professor Burkhardt.
I hope I can get my pictures now. Let me see. You can see now?
Not yet. It's coming up. Now we can see several images. You probably,
and
yes.
Now
we can see the first one, autopsy and histology study on vaccination.
Well, yes, this first slide gives you an overview of what we have been doing in the last year. So it was about 1 year ago that relatives approached me and asked, and they had the suspicion that their relatives had not died of natural causes, but of sequences of this vaccination. So at that time, I wrote to the National Pathology Associations, and I suggested that a nationwide study should be started to see the consequences of deaths occurring in the time associated with vaccination. And well, I didn't get any answer at that time, so I said, well, if nobody else would do it, I will do it. And through the months following, there have been many there have been pathologists, physicians, biologists turning to me, and they ask, well, we see similar cases, we have the same observations, and so we actually are now 8 pathologists and medicals and one physicist also joined us just recently. So the material is 30 autopsies and 4 biopsies. Actually today four more cases arrived, so I have 35 cases now. And it's very time consuming to study these cases. So I will practically, most of the data that I will give are linked to 15 initial cases that were analyzed by routine methods and three with advanced methods. So you see here the people that died, seven male, eight females, 7 days to 6 months after the last injection, and the age range was 28 to 95 years. And you see these were the usual vaccinations that are used in Germany, mostly Pfizer and Moderna. So we were asked to do a second opinion. These were autopsies that were carried out elsewhere, some in pathology institutes, some in forensic medicine, and at the microscopic examination of the organs did not result in any suspicion that this was, the death was connected with the vaccination. All the cases in the forensic medicine were not even examined by histopathology, and only suspicion was arisen when the relatives insisted on a second opinion. And our second opinion showed that there are certain histological characteristics that are seen in most of the cases. I will show these characteristics in the following slides. But our result was that in five cases there was a very likely association with the death process, seven likely, two possible, and in one case we did not exclude, find any provable cause that connection with the vaccination. So very important is the fact that most of the patients that we examined were not treated for a long time in the hospital. This rules out all therapeutic changes in the organs. For example, if a patient has been subdued to artificial respiration, the changes in the lungs are secondary, and you cannot see what the vaccination did and what has the respiration done. So this is very important because most of the autopsies are done in hospitals, and most of these patients that are autopsied in the hospitals have been treated for a long time in the hospital. But our collective really was mostly non-treated, and they collapsed at home, in the street, in the car, at work, and in the retirement home. So actually, we found lesions in most organs, and at the first place, the blood vessels were damaged. The small vessels, the endothelium, the innermost layer, and the vessel wall. Then in the vessel walls, in the vessels, we found some unidentified intravascular material, which I will talk later about. Then spleen and lymph nodes, the lymphatic organs, showed very characteristic changes, and heart, lung, brain also had, in most cases, inflammatory changes. And finally, we found what we call lymphocyte amok in most organs outside of the lymphatic organs, and these were very much reminiscent of autoimmune phenomena in, observed in autoimmune diseases. So what were our methods used? Routine histological preparation, conventional stains, and immunohistochemistry. And especially immunohistochemistry is the second step that we are right now in. We use the standard markers of inflammatory cells. And in some cases, we were able to show the spike protein in these tissue. So to anybody who is not acquainted with microscopy and the way organs look under the microscope, this is the normal liver, and you can see there are these dark spots that are the nuclei, and then there's the cytoplasm, which has a little bit granular appearance. Mostly these are mitochondria. So we are able to see the nucleus and the cytoplasm and also some changes in the cytoplasm. And one of the most impressive change was a change in the lining of the small vessels and capillaries, and you can see in the normal vessels they are lined by a very thin layer of endothelial cells. You can only see these spindle-shaped cell nuclei, but they are firmly attached to the wall of the vessel. And in the vaccinated patients, we saw this phenomenon. It's the endothelial cells have swollen nuclei. They are detached from their from the wall, and they are intermixed with erythrocytes. So now and then you see this phenomenon also caused by autolysis, which is decay after death. But we definitely could prove that these small vessels are actually destroyed by lymphocytic inflammatory infiltrates. You still see the elongated, swollen, spindle-shaped nuclei, and the whole area is infiltrated and they are really destructed. Now, of course, we were thinking about how could this be, and we were interested in showing if the spike protein could be shown in these damaged cells. And just for those who are not familiar with immunohistochemistry, so you can see the sequence here, and finally we use multiple antibodies, and the last one has some coloration, some color on it, and so we have brown pigment, and you see here a positive reaction in a cell of a salt culture. And actually, before we employed this method on our histological slides of the autopsy persons, we did studies in cell cultures, and these are cell cultures as negative controls, and here we have transfection with the vaccine, and this is a larger magnification, and you can see there's a strong positive reaction here. And now we applied it to the tissue that we were seeing, and where we saw damage to the vessels, and on the right side you can see these small capillaries, and there's a definite and very specific staining of these cells, and also in the smaller arterial walls you can see that the inner part, the inner layer of the artery is definitely stained. Also you can see here inside some desquamated cells. And we observed these damages to not only in the small vessels but also in the large vessels, especially in the aorta. And we have two cases now who died of a ruptured aorta. And here you can see one of the specimens. Here you can see the inside on the right side, the inside where the blood flows. And the wall of the aorta is composed of a regular lining of alternating smooth muscle cells and elastic fibers. And you can see already here in the wall there are some areas where the texture is irregular, and there are some small points which are lymphocytes, and more impressive even the inflammatory reaction on the outside of the aorta proper. So these are the so-called vasa vasorum, the vessels of the vessel. And to show it in a larger magnification, you can see these defects in the arterial wall of the aorta, and you can see there's an inflammatory reaction. Again, a proof that this is an intravital damage to the wall of the aorta. And we saw the same thing in larger and smaller arteries. And again, we ask ourselves, could this be a toxic effect of the spike protein? Similar changes are known after some genetic defects, but also in some poisonings, like what they call latirisin. That is a poison that is in some Kichererbsen, I don't know the German word, the English word, but it's very rare, and it leads to a dissection and disruption of aorta. So we knew that this could happen in poisoning. And you can see here, we did a demonstration of the spike protein, and you can see these very clear marking of the nuclei of these myofibroblasts which line the aorta, and also in the vicinity of the vasa vasorum, of the smaller vessels in the outer layer of the aorta, are definitely positive reacting. So how often did we see this? First of all, the damage of the small vessels, the endothelialitis, as some people call it, the swelling, desquamation, and lymphocytic infiltration, we saw in 11 cases, vasculitis and perivasculitis of larger vessels in 10 cases, focal vessel wall necrosis and inflammatory reaction, as I have shown, in 6 cases, and inflammation accompanied by thrombosis in 2 cases, and I may add a rupture of the aorta in 2 cases. So we come to other organs. We come to the liver and the spleen. You can see these two tissue specimens were in one paraffin block, and they were sectioned and stained in the same manner, and also they were fixed and embedded in the same way. And here you can see the liver, and the liver itself is largely negative. So, but if you look closely, you may see some small vessels in there which are positive, and the spleen shows a completely different picture. The spleen itself has a diffuse positive staining, but even at this magnification, you can see that the vessels, these round areas here, are definitely strongly positive. So first of all, I will show you the liver, And you can see that the liver cells are negative. There's a slight non-specific reaction, but this cannot be ruled positive. And you can see that the endothelial cells in the liver are strongly positive. And in the spleen, we saw, as we all have already seen in the this low magnification, we saw very diffuse and specific staining of the cells, and we found a phenomenon which is known from some autoimmune diseases, which is called this onion skin inflammation of the central arteries of the spleen. And this is, for example, seen in lupus erythematosus, and also changes that, as far as we know, and I think about 50 pathologists have looked at it by now, it's a focal destruction of follicular arteries with prolapse of lymphatic follicular tissue. And here you can see these are the spots where we found changes, and here this is the area that is important. That's the white pulp of the spleen, and it's a follicle with a central follicular artery. And this is a phenomenon that I referred to. It is the onion skin reaction or phenomenon that means that the wall of this small artery has changed and is disorganized. And finally, also in these arteries that show this phenomenon, we definitely could demonstrate a strong positive reaction for the spike protein. And this is a phenomenon that I referred to that, as far as I know, has never been described. This is a small central artery of the spleen, and you can see that this is a wall, and here there's a defect, and the lymphatic tissue, which is proliferating and has some pressure, exerts some pressure, has a prolapse into this artery. And then the other lymphatic organs show activation. You see the lymph nodes may be, in some cases, very much enlarged. And on the other hand, we saw what is an infarct of the central lymph nodes in some cases. This is a normal one, just to show you the follicles. And this is a phenomenon described by some Japanese authors and may be associated with the vessel changes, with changes of the small arteries or capillaries. And now we come to the other organ lesions. By now it is internationally accepted that vaccination may cause myocarditis, an inflammation of the heart muscle, and you can see a normal specimen, and here you can see the lymphocytes, these small dark dots that are infiltrating, and they are not only infiltrating, but in some cases they lead to necrosis of the muscle cells of the heart. And this is very important to differentiate this from banal infarction of the heart tissue, because in a infarction, in a normal infarction, you don't see many lymphocytes, but predominantly granulocytes. So we come to the lung. On the right side, again, a lung with normal alveoli, which are filled with air, and there are some lymphocytes inside and some macrophages. But here, after vaccination and not after artificial respiration, you see this lung tissue has collapsed and there are dense lymphocytic infiltrations. And these are T lymphocytes, as we could show by immunohistochemistry. And now we come to changes in the brain. And for those who are not familiar, we have the skin and the skull, and we have the dense connective tissue here, the dura mater, and this loose connective tissue in the arachnoidea with some very delicate vessels, blood vessels, and then of course we have the brain tissue. And we found changes in all three of these locations. And these are the main findings: transfection-associated encephalitis, lymphocytic infiltration and focal destruction of intracerebral and arachnoidal blood vessels, subarachnoid bleeding without aneurysma. As you may know, aneurysma of the vessels of the brain are the most common cause of rupture. Then we have focal lymphocytic infiltration in the dura mater, and finally, in one case, necrosis of the partial necrosis of the hypophyseal gland. And here you can see the lymphocytic infiltration in the dura mater, which is the part membrane that covers the brain and the skull. And you can see in this 26-year-old male who died after the vaccination, you find this infiltration. And in the same case, we also found lymphocytic infiltration in the small vessels of the brain tissue itself. And coming to an end with the autopsy cases, I will show you one additional case with a necrotizing encephalitis, 76-year-old man with a necrotizing encephalitis, vasculitis of the aorta and coronary artery, as I have shown, lymphocytic myocarditis, and in this case, here you can see the changes of the brain tissue. There's a necrosis, and there is a granulocytic and lymphocytic inflammatory infiltration. And in this case, also we could demonstrate the spike protein mainly in the vessel walls, as you can see here, but also in the neural cells itself, as you can see here. This is a typical granular reaction. And this is a demonstration of one recent case that we examined. We come to the last larger entity that we observed, that is what we call the lymphocytic amoc. Accumulation of lymphocytes, some call it lymphocytosis, in non-lymphatic organs, inflammation and tissue destruction predominantly caused by lymphocytes, as we have seen, for example, in the myocardium, but we see it also in other organs, practically in all tissues. It could happen, and this reminds very much of changes that we observe in autoimmune diseases. And this is just the frequency that we have observed. This actually, these figures are have to be interpreted, because we only had salivary gland in two of the cases, autopsies, and both cases showed salivary gland inflammation in the sense of in the sense of an autoimmune disease. And the thyroid glands also, we only have two cases, and both had infiltrations, like in Hashimoto thyroiditis. Aorta, I have shown you, skin, I will show you later, liver, kidney, testis, and crura mater I already showed you. Now this is just one example here. You can see the lymph node, and you can see this is like a small lymph node right in the middle of the lung. It has reaction centers here, and this is very rare that you observe this. And this is the thyroid gland. You can see these dark areas are infiltration, small lymphocytic infiltrations, again with germinal centers and activation like small lymph nodes. Now we come to another problem. I mentioned that we observed strange material in the vessels of and tissues of by now 5 cases. And this is one example we found in the vessel of the spleen. First we thought this were just fat cells, but they have an inner structure. Then we thought it might be a contrast material, but the patient died at home and never was in the hospital in the last year. So actually, we do not know. We showed it to about 50 pathologists, and nobody knows what this material is. We will make further investigations, and our suspicion is that this is the material from the injected vaccine material. The nano lipid particles might coalesce when they warm up in the body, and they might circulate and finally accumulate in the vessels. And this is in a similar finding in the fat tissue in one case. And also here we have this strange intracellular structures that nobody knows what it is. So we just call it unidentified. And in one case that is has a longer history after vaccination, we found these strange materials and some tissue reaction and fibrosis. So I will just show you one final autopsy case. A case of a 40-year-old man which was supposed to have died of a natural cause, because there was definitely myocardial infarct that he had died of, and he had a vaccination, and the autopsy, just by the macroscopic aspect, seemed to be to ascertain the fact that he died of a heart infarction, and he did die of a heart infarct, but he had pre-existing arteriosclerosis, but there was in addition the lymphocytic myocarditis that I had shown you before, and we found, and this is a cross-section of the coronary artery. Here you see the thrombus. This is a thrombus that caused the myocardial infection and caused the death. But in addition, you find arteriosclerotic changes. And then again, what I showed you in the beginning, there are areas in the deeper layer of the vessel here where you can see there's some disturbance of the structure, and there's infiltration by lymphocytes, and the lymphocytic infiltration also is in the vicinity around the vessel. And here you can see these also in the fatty tissue, and here lymphocytic infiltration. Now this is very unusual, and I think I have never seen it in a vessel. So the logical consequence is this man died of an inflammation of the and disturbance of the coronary artery, which caused thrombosis, and the thrombosis caused the heart infarct. And actually, he did not die of natural causes, but he died of consequences of the vaccination. And finally, some examples of surgical bioptic specimens, appendectomy, bronchial biopsy, and skin lesion. Here you can see an observation of the other pathologists that I worked together with. They found that the specimens of appendectomy often did not show much inflammation in the inside of the appendix, but marked inflammation in the vicinity of the appendix. And you can see it here. This is the fat tissue around the appendix. And again, we did the demonstration of the spike protein. And actually, it was very clearly expressed by the endothelial cells around the appendix. And here, a 26-year-old man after vaccination, 9 months after vaccination, and he had still difficulties with breathing, dyspnea. And so they did a bronchoscopy in 9 months after the vaccination, and the bronchoscopic picture showed a normal mucosal surface, no secretion. But in our histology, we had marked inflation of the mucosa with eosinophilia. And we could again demonstrate the spike protein. Now, first of all, to those who are not familiar, inside the epithelium, there are often these elongated cells, which are not epithelial, and we call them dendritic cells. They are functional in immune detection and immunosurveillance. And here you can see that these dendritic cells within the bronchial epithelia are strongly marked with a spike protein, while the epithelial endothelial cells of the small vessels are only very mildly marked. And finally, a skin biopsy. Here you can see there are some granulomatous reaction in under the skin, and this is under further investigation. We did not do the spike protein in these cases. So when we did these examinations, all cases were seen by two pathologists, and other pathologists also have seen all problematic changes. And again, we were asking ourselves, well, are we chasing a phantom? Is this really true? We looked at each other and said, well, do you see this too? Do you see this phenomenon? Do you see that this artery has an onion skin phenomenon? And well, we came to the conclusion, no, we are not chasing a phantom. Further studies are necessary and provocative. Thank you very much.
Just one quick question, Professor Burkhardt. When you saw the expression of the spike protein in the organs and the cells, can you exclude the possibility that it entered the body in any other way than through the vaccinations, the inoculations?
Well,
is there any possibility that there's another way?
Well, some people had the idea that these people might have had what you call a real infection by the coronavirus. But then, first of all, most of these people died suddenly. They just collapsed. And I've never heard of any corona infection where people don't have a longer history of respiratory problems and so on and so on. But we are right now doing examinations of the nuclear capsid, and we will very soon have the results.
Thank you very much. My colleagues, before we enter the discussion and ask more questions, we should listen to our final expert on this topic, Professor Bergholz, if that is okay. Professor Bergholz.
Now I guess you can hear me.
Yes.
And I have a presentation. Now, listening, it turned out that what I have prepared, in a way, seems to be maybe a good summary of what we've heard today. So let's have a look. So I have to go to share screen first. There we go. So how much time do I have?
We are under a little bit of time pressure.
Yes, as usual. So I'll. So now I'm switching to full presentation mode now, if my computer does that. And I hope that works. Do you see the full presentation now?
Yes.
Good. So I'm not a medical person. How come that I am in this group of people? Well, my claim to fame in this group is that I've practiced quality and risk management for something like 20 years, if not longer, and I've also taught it at university. I've also researched on it, and I have about 17 years of industry experience in production. So what Mike said about scaling up was right up my street, and I'll come back to that later. I'll skip over that overview. Now, the topic is quality perspective. Now, why is this relevant? I had a close look at the leaked Pfizer contract, and somewhere it said that the quality of the product and tests should constantly be tested and good manufacturing practice should be done. So far, so good. Nothing unusual. Now, the real beauty comes now. What does it say? Indemnification. That is, if there is any problem, normally the manufacturers are free from all damage claims. But this will not be available in case of a material breach, a significant breach of good manufacturing process practice. So, if we find substantial non-conformities relative to ISO 9001, which is kind of the gold standard of how you do a quality management system, then it will mean that indemnification is void, which I think is something that we all like to see. So that is a kind of busy slide. So that is non-conformities in the development process. Our Canadian expert already said there were false expectation raised, that it can do any, that it can protect you. This, I haven't even listed that. But what she also said, known risks from animal experience on previous attempts to bring those so-called vaccinations to market, they had all been ignored and I would say circumvented. Pfizer gave a statement in October 2020 that they had not done animal experiments. And also the telescoping of phases, which I would have called quality gates in my language, if you do that in parallel, you have an undue increase in risk. I don't think that needs any further explanation. Then our Canadian friend already mentioned many of those things that Peter Doshi, the co-editor of the British Medical Journal, listed as severe deficiencies in that study. I think even called it fraudulent. Okay, and then what is, I think, ridiculous, premature unblinding and vaccination of large parts of the control group. Then the questionable endpoint was mentioned, and that the relative risk reduction is absolutely irrelevant, and yet we are talking about 1%. So the development process is seriously flawed. And that is the first serious non-conformity, which simply cannot be excused by urgency. Okay. Then the papers that were presented to the European Medicine Agency in December 2020 were subject, conditional approval was subject to several obligations, I call them. And as Mike pointed out, most of those obligations were related to either poor process or poor materials control, most of which those obligations which should have been dealt with by June 2020 are not even fulfilled by this time. Mm-hmm. And normally the only action would have been stop the whole thing until the manufacturers have done their job. Not so here. Okay, then Mike also pointed that out. If you go from such a small quantity that you use for those 40 or 50,000 portions or doses for the studies, if you go to manufacturing billions, you have two problems. You cannot but use lower grade chemicals, and you have to use large scale equipment. And so in a way, I think Mike said so, and I would agree, you would have to start from scratch again, because what you get out of this product is different, definitely different. The only question is how much from the original product. So the conclusion number three is it seems relatively unlikely that we will have stable mass production. And the proof is here. What do we see here? We see a sequence in this case of 175 adverse effect reports for 175 lots. I've not put the lot numbers themselves, but they were in alphabetical or alphanumerical order. So this, for all we know, was the time sequence that they were made. And this is, by the way, statistical process control, how to treat it. Anything that goes above the dotted line is out of control. The process should be stopped immediately. And what we can also see, even in between, we have quiet periods, then it starts to wobble a little bit. But that is one of the better periods. So it's getting worse. Here we have a quiet period, and then it starts to wobble again. And the interesting thing, this batch, which I've annotated here, is the second batch that the 15-year-old girl, Cheyenne Brown, was inoculated or vaccinated with. And from what I remember, she died about 3 weeks or 4 weeks later. And I've checked that also for the first injection. And again, her injection was not one of the worst. These would have been the worst. But again, it was in one of those bumpy ride periods rather than those periods. And what I suspect is if we would follow up all the people that would be vaccinated by these, then we would find, my prediction, a lot more dead people. Because The number of cases, by the way, that have been reported correlates rather well with the number of deaths and the number of seriously injured. So, even worse, what we see here are those super toxic batches that Mike has referred to. What we can see here, I'll go back in a minute, we see here the maximum scale is 30, and here we are at 3,000. Those isolated groups of batches are absolutely out of any thing that can happen statistically. There was something done on purpose. So I think here we have clear evidence there was a intentional thing being done. And what I learned from the website, How Bad Is My Batch, they have analyzed that those batches, and that's also important to know, were sent to all 50 states of the United States, whereas those harmless batches went to anything between 2 and 12, as if I remember. So how did the manufacturers know that they had to distribute those to 50 states in order to dilute it down? They knew it. So there was intention at least to send them out. No, efficacy. Already in July 2021, I had found evidence from the Israel data that the efficacy had completely waned by then. And of course, then they started the booster and the fourth injection. And of course, the result was things got worse and worse. So this is a very recent thing from England, and I would like to really show this in person to our Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who is advocating obligatory injections. Red is per 100,000 people, the vaccinated people that were tested positive, per 100,000 in January, and blue is the unvaccinated. So I think it's very clear, if you want to get the risk to be at least positively tested, most likely then also infected after what we've heard, how our immune system is run down, if you want to increase the risk, get vaccinated. So in other words, we do have by now the pandemic of the vaccinated, no doubt in my opinion. And this should be given to any of the members of parliament who vote in favor of vaccination. And then we know they have malintent. And coming back to adverse events, we have the problem with the adverse event reporting that there is always this gross underreporting. Therefore, I have compared, that is for Germany alone, the number of deaths per year for those approximately 70 million vaccinations per year from the year 2000 to 2019. We are talking about 20 deaths. Those COVID-19 injections have 2,255 deaths. Okay, you could say it's 50 times more deaths per injection or 100 times deaths per injected person, assuming two injections. I mean, how can you go over this and ignore this? Time and again, the experience when I talk to friends and acquaintances who believe the story, the narrative, and I tell them these are the official data, why don't we see that on the mainstream media? Sheer amazement. I leave them at that, because maybe that's the first seed that they start to think about what is going on. So we have a dramatic increase in the death rate. It also goes for the other things, and we find similar things for other countries. So coming back to what Antonia Gatti told us, I've listed what has been found by mostly light microscopy. Frequently, it has been found that there was graphene oxide strips. They looked like it, and in one case, I know of a micro-Raman spectrometry, exactly on one of those strips, there is no doubt that that was graphene oxide. No doubt at all. It's a very characteristic fingerprint. Now then, we have metallic objects, which may be debris from the production equipment. And in a very few cases, there have been reported objects which resemble fragments of microchips. I mean, I have a lot of experience since I worked in the chip industry. When you want to analyze a chip, you put that into suitable liquids and it will disintegrate. And you get fragments like that. And this looks absolutely identical to what you would expect if you disintegrate a microchip. It's unfortunate that there is no scale bar, then I could have even told you what kind of, what's the minimum feature size is. It's probably not, by far not the latest technology. So where does that stuff come from? Now, the most probable reason for me is not that it has been put there intentionally, but I suspect that this was possibly by sensorships that are in the production equipment, in which over time also can disintegrate, and nobody cares. And the filtering also seems to be very substandard if all these objects can be found, unless that stuff is added intentionally. So I'm almost done. So there's an absolute serious nonconformity. Three types of undeclared solid objects in the injection liquid. That is, there's no way. And of course, the pathology results, I don't think I need to say anything about that now. What I would like to emphasize, what I think Mike mentioned, that or someone else, there is no control of how much of the poisonous spike protein, where, and for how long that is produced. So it's what happens in our body is absolutely out of control. So every organ and every bodily function can be affected. So what kind of treatment is that? So my conclusion is, and I would love to support the jury in substantiating that, there are so many serious concerns and quality non-conformities that according to elementary quality assurance principles, all vaccinations must be halted immediately. What's also important, I mean, we did the job of the Paul Ehrlich Institute, so they must be forced to get active. If they don't, then they'll have to answer for that in court someday, I think. So, and in contract terms, regarding quality controls, almost everything has been violated, and thus, in my opinion, indemnification is void. That's it.
Actually, the conclusion that you come to in that final aspect here is the same that a group of Belgian lawyers came to, except they didn't even know about the serious defects in quality control. So this confirms what you're saying. Thank you very much, Werner. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
Yes, let us, we have two more experts who will try and explain to us why, after everything we've seen tonight, after all this destruction, deliberate destruction, wreaking havoc by the so-called vaccine, why do people allow this to happen to them? But before we talk to these experts, let us ask some questions because I think there are a few questions that we still need or want to be answered. Anna and Virginie and Dexter.
Thank you. I'll start then. I'm Anna Garner from the United States. I'm an attorney there. And I'm going to address this question, I guess, to any of you who can answer it, but we've heard a lot of testimony about the design flaws that have gone into the production and testing, rather, of these inoculations. We won't dignify them with the word vaccine. So we have many design flaws. We had the unblinding after just a couple of months. We had the, the immunobridging that they did by overlapping the studies with the adults and the younger teenagers. We have them misrepresenting the risk rate by using relative risk rates versus absolute risk rates. Is there anything about this that has been done previously in rolling out any other types of inoculations that were ostensibly for public health reasons? Is anyone aware that they have had these kinds of design flaws in previous inoculations that have been rolled out for the public?
Maybe this is a good question for Susharit or Alexandra.
Both.
Mm-hmm.
The swine flu.
I don't have an answer.
The swine flu. The swine flu that claimed so thousands of victims, that was propagated and installed without any reason. And I have to say, you know, Wolfgang Wodak and I stood up, that was, I think, 2009, and we wrote about this and said, this is bad. It's bad. Clear. Of course, you can go back to 2001.
Was it for the flu that Anna Garner was saying?
No, it was for any sort of inoculation, but I'm aware of
that. That's different.
And so
because then you mean like if there have been a number of adverse effects, for instance, and that they would be halted?
I am talking about the introduction of vaccines that have not been properly tested and that are probably ridiculous. And actually, it started with the anthrax 2001, as I recall, which was along the same lines, created by the same people who are behind this right now, and led to deaths.
Professor Bakke, may I interrupt you for a second? Now, in those situations, did they have similar types of design flaws, and were they also misrepresenting the findings that they had with the anthrax, with the swine flu, as they are with this particular, the COVID-19 inoculation?
Without going into detail, Anna, the design flaws were similar, not the same, of course, but they were there. And you have to read about this. I can't explain it to you now in 5 minutes.
That's but quite all right. But if there
scare,
were previous...
The anthrax scare and followed by the SARS and the, you know, bird virus scare, and then topped by this swine flu scare. The swine flu scare has claimed so many existences, and was representative of what was going on then in 2000, I think it was 9, and is being repeated now, but on a scale that is so horrifying that I cannot understand that people do not rise and say no. This is an absolute no. No go. And I said this before, these so-called vaccines, these jabs, are in the experimental stage. You are obliged, anyone in the world, before you let these so-called vaccines be jabbed into the bodies of people. The moment you see, this is the Nuremberg Code, by the way, the Nuremberg Code that was, of course, existent in 2009 with the swine flu, but now...
So Dr. Bhakti, what I'm trying to get at is...
Anna, let me tell you one last thing. The thing about this agenda that differs it from the previous agendas is that the deadly consequences of vaccination become apparent so quickly. And therefore, you can stop the vaccination immediately. We could not have done that 12 years ago with the swine flu because those vaccines were conventional and no one could have known what they would have done. But now we know that these vaccines are killing quickly. And, there's no discussion. Nuremberg Code, you've got to stop them.
Exactly. And they did stop them with the swine flu after only 50 deaths. And the other thing that I wanted to point out is if they were aware of these design flaws before that caused enough harm, only 50 people died, but that was still enough to stop the vaccines for the swine flu, they knew, is it reasonable for us to conclude that they knew, these manufacturers knew that these design flaws were flaws that would misrepresent to the public the safety and efficacy of their products?
I'm sorry, Anna. Look.
Did they know this or did they not know it? It's a simple question, please. Did they know it? Must they have known it? Or could they have not known it?
They could not have not known it. And therefore, it's premeditated.
Right.
And therefore, they've got to be removed from our world. And Rainer, you were saying at the very beginning, let's start a law case. And I can say it's overdue. It is overdue.
That's why we're doing this, because we cannot expect this kind of a hearing in a system court. That's why we're doing this outside of the system to show and lead the way.
Yes, Rainer, but the case is closed. The case is closed. It's so clear.
Mm.
And we will stand witness for the prosecution for you.
They will.
All of us.
Yes.
So the other cases that I'm aware of that they halted the vaccination for, it was the results were terrible. As far as I recall, it was a Nature paper with the RSV retroviral syncytial vaccines in children, and that was in some northern countries, whether Denmark or Sweden, I don't recall exactly, but I can for sure look it up for you. And the other cases are the dengue fever vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, each time the result was dreadful, and therefore they had to halt the vaccination.
Yes. Exactly, Alexander. So if they halted it then they have to halt it now. And now is tomorrow. My God. You know, what has happened now is nothing to be compared with all the horrible things that happened during the dengue. You know, I'm Thai. I know about dengue. And the anthrax. Those were terrible. But what is happening now is 10,000 times more terrible. And it is now documented that it is terrible. And Anna Burkhardt has shown pictures that must strike fear in anyone, even the lay, to see how the immune system is now being goaded into killing these people. And I don't want us to discuss this anymore. I want us to stand up and get these people to jail. They have to stop. I don't care how and why. You know, we have a little boy. And we are going to leave this country because the Germans, Alexander, sorry, the French, the Swiss are not much better. The Austrians are just as bad.
Zusharit, we're working on this. We are working on this. Right now we're trying to find out why this is happening and how this is happening.
But we know why it's happening.
In the process of working on this. Please. Bear with us.
So when I was at the parliament in the chamber of the deputy in Luxembourg, I did quote the number of deaths that they had to reach, which were very scarce. Once again, it is very recorded, very official, because it was on the display at the Luxembourg parliament, and the number was quite low to stop the vaccination.
But to come to a conclusion, do we agree that even though similar defective processes have happened in the past, this is totally, completely unheard of? Because from your reaction, Zusharit, and from everybody else's reaction, that is what I gather. This is cannot be compared with anything that has ever happened before as far as faulty processes are concerned.
Unprecedented.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're muted, Zusharit. Zusharit, you are muted.
Listen, guys. The children and the grandchildren of us are being killed. I don't know why we are arguing about anything. It's got to be stopped. It's got to be stopped. And let me tell you, every future mRNA or adenovirus vaccine will carry the same risks, the same risks.
Yeah.
They must be stopped. They must be prohibited. And never, ever in the future of mankind may these vaccines, whether they are propagated by Bill Gates, I don't know Bill Gates, I don't care about him, but he cannot have the power to have the world
We understand your point. Everyone seems to agree on this, but that is the conclusion that we have to draw from the findings that we are trying to make. We're not quite finished yet, but I agree with you.
Why are you finished?
You don't walk into a court of law and say, here's the result, please give me a decision that fits it. You first go through the different steps in order to gather all the evidence that you need. Sujari, please, it's okay. I understand.
But the evidence is there.
Zusharit, maybe doctors do this, lawyers don't. Have patience, or else we will fail. Because if we move too fast, we will fail. Please understand this.
Okay. The next 10,000 children die. I don't want it.
No one wants this.
I can't stand it.
Virginie, please.
Yes, thank you. I will make my rule to record for the court, the grand jury, and the judge. I will ask this formally to the experts. Do you think, based on your medical and scientific conclusions, that the following rules coming from the Nuremberg Code were respected by the gene therapy producers and international national agencies? If you would like, you can answer by yes, it's respected or not, or no, it's not. Rule number two, the experiment must be such that it produces results that are advantageous to the good of society, impossible to obtain by other methods or means of study, and not random or superfluous in nature. Do you think that it has been respected?
We know all of this.
And number three, the experiment must be conducted in such a way as to avoid unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury. Do you think that it was respected?
Of course not. We know all of this.
Number four, and I will go until number six. Number four, no experiment should be conducted when there is a priori reason to believe that death or disabling injury will occur. Do you think that it was respected?
Of course not.
Five, the level of risk to be taken should never exceed the humanitarian importance of the problem to be solved by the experiment. Do you think that it was respected?
Of course not.
And the last one, provision shall be made and means provided to protect the subject from even the remote possibility of injury, disability or death. Do you think it was respected?
Of course not, and we know this.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We know this. We know this, Susharit, but the jury does not know it yet. This is, for some people, the very first time they are hearing this. Dexter, you wanted to ask a question.
Yeah. In conclusion, Professor Bhakti, when you gave evidence, you did actually gave evidence to the extent that we are now at phase four. So my question that I want to pose to each and every one of you or whoever actually wants to answer is that when Dina McLeod, when she gave evidence, and I don't know as to whether I've actually captured it correctly, but you can assist me in this, is that only when one actually conducts phase three of an experiment, medical experiment, can one prove efficacy. Is this correct, or have I missed out anything here? Have I missed out anything? Professor, I can't hear you, Professor Bhakti. You are muted. Professor Bhakti.
Listen, you guys. What is efficacy? This is the thing that has been going through the whole session, starting with Alexandra and ending with us. How do you define efficacy? If you define efficacy by saying you are not going to have a cold, I say no. Efficacy has always been defined by the number of severe infections and death. And there we have the answer. The answer has been there all the time. Nothing in this whole scam has been ever shown to be efficacious, because there is no efficacy if you have an infection fatality rate of 0.15.
My question, and this is where I want to get to, and I want the jury to understand, your evidence that you have given, you state that we are now at phase four. So my question I'm posing to you or to anyone is that when, at what stage can one conclusively actually prove efficacy? Because if we are in a phase four, I'm not sure as to whether I've captured the evidence correctly from Dina McLeod, that you can only test efficacy at phase three. So if you can clarify, or anyone can clarify that for the jury, that would be much appreciated.
All right, I'm going to just give you my opinion. Efficacy, to test efficacy by numbers, which mean nothing, which is what is going on now, as we have heard today, becomes secondary to the Nuremberg codex, which says that in the moment that you have danger looming with what you are trying to apply, you must stop that trial. And now we know, I don't care about efficacy. You cannot exchange one life for the other. You cannot say, I'm going to kill you in order to maybe protect your grandmother. This is not allowed. And therefore, we don't have to talk about efficacy. The moment any experimental agent is shown to be dangerous, it's got to be stopped, and the cause of this has to be investigated. If they do not do this, they are defying the Nuremberg Code and have to be taken to court.
Thank you, Professor Bakhti. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dexter.
No further questions from me. What will basically happen is that when it comes to efficacy, we will actually clarify that as well, also on based on all the evidence that has been led up until now, and that will continue to be led in our closing arguments. But thank you so much, Professor Bakhti.
Yes, thank you very much. Let us now turn
this section.
Let us close this part of our hearing and go into why is this happening? How is it possible that so many people can be made to agree to these kinds of medical interventions? We have two experts for this. One is Meredith Miller, and the other one is Ariane Bileran, both of whom know a lot about psychology. Who wants to start? Meredith, I'm sorry to keep you waiting for so long.
No worries. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. So for the last 2 years, we have witnessed around the world the same patterns of abuse dynamics that we see in interpersonal relationships. And I'm speaking in terms of psychological abuse, which is mostly invisible, yet very real, insidious, and pervasive in the life of an individual who's been targeted. So over the years of working with clients who are victims and survivors of abuse, only a small percentage of the people that I've worked with experienced physical abuse. Those who experienced physical abuse as well as psychological abuse told me that in the long run, the psychological abuse was far more damaging to them in their entire life. This is not to minimize physical abuse. This is to emphasize how damaging psychological abuse can be. So my understanding of psychological abuse comes from a lifetime of immersion experience in these environments, in the family, in relationships, and studying and working for 16 years in holistic healing and coaching. So in the last 6 years, I've specialized in a micro niche called narcissistic abuse, which is predominantly psychological abuse. And over working with these people, I've had the opportunity even to work with some people with PhDs, some in psychology, and also with some licensed psychotherapists who told me they didn't see it in their own life. They didn't see the patterns of the abuse, and that they also didn't learn how to recognize psychological abuse in their training programs. So today I want to talk about the two most important concepts from my perspective to understand, in order to understand the individual experience who's been targeted by abuse in terms of what we're dealing with when people fall into the narrative, or even when evidence and information and truth is coming out and people continue to grab on to the narrative. Why would people choose to ingest an experimental substance, but also why would they comply with the narrative in general? And at the very end, I want to bring up a study from Yale University from 2020 that's going to bridge what Brian Garish was talking about last weekend. He was talking about the applied behavioral psychology. He brought up a study that was done, and he said that it could be used to change the way that people think and feel and behave. And so this Yale study, this Yale University study from 2020, basically gives us the keys to understanding the particular emotional manipulation tactics that they use. Now, they don't call it emotional manipulation. They call it COVID-19 vaccine messaging. And I'm not going to speak about the science because that's not my field. My field is recognizing the red flags of emotional abuse and manipulation. So that's what I'm going to speak on. So the first concept to understand about abuse is the cognitive dissonance. This is a survival mechanism that happens. So let's say a person has been cultivated to believe in a certain worldview or perspective or this narrative that was launched in 2020. And then all of a sudden you present to them some evidence or information that contradicts everything that they've believed up until then, the person is going to be unable to reconcile this conflict in their mind and in their brain. And what's going to happen is a tremendous amount of stress and anxiety on the nervous system, which triggers the amygdala circuit, and almost a short circuit or hijacking of the brain, and the person goes into denial. So they won't be able to see that evidence. That's why as the truth more is coming out, people simply can't look at it. They might get angry at the messenger. They might simply turn away or cut somebody out of their life because they're trying to show them some evidence. Some people might be a little more aware of their cognitive dissonance, and when you try to show them the evidence, they might even tell you, I can't look at that because if what you're saying is true, I can't exist in a world like that. So this is the nature of cognitive dissonance, and this is what keeps people in this brain fog. And in the brain fog of the cognitive dissonance, that inner conflict, it's very difficult to think. So people have a very difficult time with cognitive processes, with critical thinking, and what they want to do is see the good in the abuser, in the perpetrator. So the second survival mechanism that happens is similar to cognitive dissonance, but more complex. Cognitive dissonance, from my perspective, is sort of like a level one. It's this conflict that happens in the dissonance in the brain. The level two is the Stockholm syndrome. There are more complex dynamics taking place here. So in interpersonal relationships, we typically call this a trauma bond, but with strangers, we call it Stockholm syndrome. The same mechanisms are taking place in the human brain and neurological system. So what's happening with Stockholm syndrome is there are four parameters, and I'm going to explain these in a very clear way that people can understand how this relates to what they've experienced and what they've witnessed in other people. And I'm going to give some examples too of how we've seen these four parameters show up in real life since 2020. So the very first one is isolation. And this could be either physical and or psychological isolation. The most important key here is that the person is isolated from outside perspectives. They can only have the perpetrator's narrative. So the perpetrator will make sure that they don't have access to outside perspectives because this keeps the person completely subscribed to that, that narrative. So what scientists have discovered is that after a period of prolonged isolation, what happens is that chronically elevated stress levels begin to change a person's neurological system, changing then their ability to form social bonds and even causing irritability and aggression when they're given the chance to participate in social situations. So the state that's caused after the isolation, the prolonged isolation, is disconnection. Disconnection, the polyvagal theory, triggers a sense of unsafe. A person begins to feel unsafe when we're not socially connected. We are mammals. We rely on social connection in order to feel safe at a neurological level. So how the isolation played out in the world, there's been a domestic confinement, for example, where people were told to stay home with minimal social opportunities. And then how were they isolated by the perpetrator's narrative was through the technology. So in order to understand the individual experience, we also have to look at the environment in which the individual exists, and that is in a world of increasing technological dependence. So an individual is at home and they are constantly connected to their cell phone, to the internet, to the TV. They're listening to mainstream media. They're going on social media and they're constantly bombarded with the repetition of that message. Even on corporations, there's a coordinated corporate messaging repeating those same catchphrases that we're hearing from public officials and through the mainstream media. Even going shopping at a corporate grocery store, you're walking around the store at Walmart or Kroger, and in the background, constantly assaulting your subconscious are the loudspeakers telling you those same messages about staying 6 feet apart and wearing your mask and getting vaccinations. And so in order to control a person's exposure to outside perspectives, what have we seen? We've seen censorship, silencing, propaganda, fact-checking, silencing, shaming, and smearing anybody providing that outside perspective. So this is essentially how the isolation phase took place. So the next phase of the Stockholm syndrome is the perceived acts of kindness. And this is part of the abuse cycle. So in an abusive relationship, it's going to go back and forth between idealization and devaluation, some sort of reward and then punishment. And so we call this intermittent reinforcement. And it goes back and forth. The perceived act of kindness is the idealization part. And so what that does is that causes the person to relax their guard, to begin to trust the perpetrator. And then the intermittent reinforcement and the intermittent reward causes the person to work harder to get that reward, to invest more in that relationship or that life situation, and to develop an almost obsession with compliance based on the hope of getting that reward. So the state that a person goes into due to this perceived act of kindness, and the key word here is perceived, because this isn't kindness coming from an abuser, it's a manipulation. But the nervous system and the person perceives it as an act of kindness. So the state that's caused here is almost an addiction to that hope, an addiction to the hope that this will be the time that they get the reward, or this will be the time that change for good happens. So how has this played out? Well, we've gone through phases of lockdowns and then some restoration of some freedom, some loosening of restrictions, and then lockdowns again, and then back and forth. We've been through this cycle multiple times since 2020. Currently, the trends around the world in many places, again, we're coming into this perceived act of kindness. We're hearing some governments are dropping some regulations. So what's going to happen? People's hopes are getting up again. They're going to be hoping that, oh, this is finally it. We're going back to normal. And that's the thing that every victim in an abusive relationship is hoping to get back to the good times. So what we hear in society is people are hoping to get back to normal. Other acts of perceived kindness, we've seen so many, the free vaccine. We've also seen in America lotteries in some states get vaccinated and win $50, $100, up to $1 million in some states. Other states offering french fries, donuts, guns, trucks. You can even get a free lap dance from a stripper in Las Vegas if you get your vaccine at that place. We've also seen mortgage and student loan forbearance, you know, allowing people time to put that off. And we've heard promises of safety. It's for your good. It's because we care. These are perceived acts of kindness. And also, and this is a key, little bits and dosing of truth. So this perceived act of kindness is dosed periodically, almost like a drug, through the relationship or the situation. And so when they disclose little bits of truth and they let little bits of truth leak out, what happens? We get our hopes up again that finally the truth is coming out. And we're going to be able to move on and move past this. So then the third parameter of the Stockholm syndrome is a perceived life threat. So now we're getting into more serious state. So the nervous system, perceived, is again the key word. When the autonomic nervous system perceives a cue of life threats in the environment, the person is automatically locked into an autonomic state of collapse. And this is over a period of time. This doesn't happen the first time. It happens after bombardment and shock trauma of fear messaging repeated over in the imagery that they've shown, utterly terrifying people. So over a period of time of that terror, what happens is the autonomic nervous system will immediately go into a state of immobilization. So in the state of immobilization, a person feels frozen. They may dissociate. They might check out, not really be present. So they're not really paying attention. They're in sort of an automaton behavior, which makes compliance and control a lot easier. And so also the brain fog that kicks in, and even a metabolic shutdown. So as the nervous system goes into this state of autonomic collapse, they may also go into metabolic shutdown. Now, the interesting thing is this state also leads a person to decreased immunity. Now, that's very interesting to notice because we're in a pandemic. And when a person is triggered into this state by the autonomic nervous system, endogenous opioids are also released in the body, which cause the person to stay numb. So that's helpful when a person is going through a lot of pain. But then that becomes maladaptive because that numbness keeps the person locked in this state. So it's very difficult to do anything, to take any action, because they are neurologically immobilized. So why are people so afraid? On one side, we've seen the messaging of the fear of the virus and also the fear of other people who they've been conditioned to believe are dangerous and diseased. And on the other side, a lot of people have become very afraid of the tyranny that's happening. So the fourth and final parameter of the Stockholm syndrome is a perceived inability to escape. So the person is in this state of collapse for a while, and this goes on and on and on over a period of time. They become exhausted. They have no energy to try anything, to strive for anything. They go into a state what we call learned helplessness, which is also known as debility, dependency, dread, which causes apathy. And in this state of apathy, debility, and dread, a person starts to become hopeless. They feel utterly powerless over their life. They feel like everything is out of control. And what happens is when they're locked into this state, this very low state of consciousness, they don't even have access to the fight or flight system. It takes more energy. They don't even have the energy to fight or flight here. So they certainly don't have access to the higher states of consciousness, like critical thinking, the intellectual brain, or even things like imagination. So if a person cannot imagine the way out, how are they ever going to get out? And it's not that a person has to be locked behind prison doors. Most abuse victims walk out their door multiple times a day. They go to work, they go to school to pick up their kids, they do life, and they go back home, right? So it's the perceived inability to escape. And this person is so terrorized and so debilitated and so dependent on the abuser that they begin to believe that their survival is dependent on the perpetrator. They also lose complete capability for creativity and all of the beautiful things that make us human. And so what happens is in this state, it goes on and on and on. And over a period of time, this person becomes spiritually bankrupt. They lose all faith. And when all faith is lost, the only thing left is emptiness. And that word emptiness does not do justice for the feeling and the experience that a person has. It is the worst feeling that a human can have because you feel like you are untethered and lost and floating in the universe with no connection, no support, no promise for the future. And I think that a lot of people have been locked into this state. And so what happens is that people will escape into fantasy. So we've seen a huge increase in pornography. We've seen a huge increase in addictions, in overdoses, and we even see self-harm, huge increases in suicide. So why is this even possible? Because a lot of people's entire sense of reality is coming through the technology. It's coming through the media. It's coming through the social media. It's coming through contact with other people who are in this narrative. So this is a very difficult place. When a person is in this place, the mentality is, I can't. It's just everything is, I can't. So how can they possibly wake up? How can they possibly do anything other than what they're told by the abuser? And they learn that resistance is painful. So the example is the wife who experiences marital rape. And so she learns over a period of time that it's futile to resist, and that resistance only leads to more pain. So just let him get it over with. And I've heard so many people say, I just wanted to get it over with. I just got my shot. You know, they're in this state. So the Stockholm syndrome, really, it explains why people stay in abusive relationships or situations like this narrative, why people return, why people cannot see the evidence that's coming, why people are irrationally loyal to these abusers and perpetrators, and why people even develop empathy for them. So do I have a few more minutes to show the Yale study?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen. expert. I'm so sorry. Oh, no, it wants me to quit Zoom. I'm so sorry. This is on clinicaltrials.gov. If anybody wants to look this up, clinicaltrials.gov, COVID-19 vaccine messaging, NIH, U.S. National Library of Medicine. This was done at Yale University in July of 2020. And what they did is they used emotional manipulation messages like personal freedom, economic freedom, self-interest, community interest, economic benefit, guilt, embarrassment, anger, trust in science, and not bravery. The interesting thing is that they tell us straight away what their outcome measures are. Their primary outcome measure is intention to get the COVID-19 vaccine. So they want to know what a person's intention is to get it after 3 months or after 6 months of it becoming available. The secondary outcome measures, number one, vaccine confidence. So they want to know how much trust people can have or how they can influence people's trust in the vaccine. Number two, persuade others. So they want to know a person's willingness to persuade others to take the vaccine. Number three, fear of those who have not been vaccinated. Number four, social judgment of those who do not vaccinate. And they give you four items to measure the judgment of this person, their trustworthiness. So if you don't get it, you're not trustworthy. Selfishness, if you don't get it, you're selfish. Likeableness, if you don't get it, you're not likable. Incompetence, if you don't get the vaccine, you're not competent. So they want to get people intended to get the vaccine. They want people's trust in the vaccine. They want people to persuade others to get it. They want people to be afraid of those who didn't get it, and they want people to socially judge those who didn't get the vaccine. And so that seems very clear that they're manipulating people about this vaccine. When we look at the messaging that they use, for example, trust in science, the premise here is that getting vaccinated against COVID-19 is the most effective way of protecting one's community. Vaccination is backed by science. If one doesn't get vaccinated, that means one doesn't understand how infections are spread or one who ignores science. The not bravery, for example, the frontline workers like firefighters and doctors are brave. Those who choose not to get vaccinated are not brave. Another one of the messaging that they've used, and this might already be ringing a bell to the jury who's thinking about the messaging that they've been hearing constantly for the last couple of years, community interest. So this message is about the dangers of COVID-19 to the health of loved ones. The more people who get vaccinated against COVID-19, the lower the risk that one's loved ones will get sick. Society must work together and all get vaccinated. So as I read through these, what I see is red flags. I even see gaslighting, which is the distortion of the perception of reality. For example, they say COVID-19 is wreaking havoc on the economy and people's economic freedoms. But that's actually not correct. It is the government regulations and restrictions and policies that are wreaking havoc on people's personal freedom and economic freedom and the economy. So I would love for any scientists to take a look at this study and see what they may want to say. I just wanted to speak about the red flags of abuse and manipulation. And I think that this study really provides that bridge to what Brian Garish was talking about using the applied behavioral psychology. This is an example in action of how they've done that and how they've manipulated people into taking this and not just taking it, but to do their bidding for them and to convince other people to get it.
When was this study conducted?
July 2020.
Can you send us a link to that
yes,
study?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
I'm gonna send it, but you can move on if you. I'm trying to pull up my thing.
It's all right. It's all right. Go ahead, Dexter.
Yeah, I just want to, Ms. Miller. When it comes to the Yale study, and you've actually put quite a lot of emphasis on it, and I'm actually just trying to understand here as to who actually gave the instructions for the study to be conducted. Do you think it's no, or is it just an academic study that was conducted, or?
I'm going to put the link in the chat. Oh, it's disabled. So I'm going to send y'all the link. I'm not a scientist, so I help. I'm a holistic coach. I help people heal after the abuse. I just recognize the red flags of abuse. I would like to see a scientist take a look at the study. All I've read is the front page that they've openly put out to the public. I'm sure that a scientist could take a look at that and dissect that in a very scientific way that could be helpful to answer your question.
Thank you.